The Marching Roundtable is proud to be an official media partner of Drum Corps International.
DCI Rewind!
On this episode, legendary designer Michael Cesario and friends discuss the 1980 27th Lancers.
The kind of real genius behind this all is George Bonfiglio, the director, who always wanted the crowd, 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 the crowd. And the audience, and remember the audience. And so he kept wanting the crowd and perfection. And you were like, I don't think we can do both. And they did.
Yeah. They do.
Yeah. But you're right. It's the fact that people forget that it's hellos and goodbyes. So here was a hello that was like, cause your job in the first 45 seconds, you know, the Mike Cesario rule, in your first 45 seconds, your job is to make them, the audience, shut up and stop talking about whoever was on before you. And the last thing you have to do in the last minute and a half, 2 minutes, is make the audience shut up and talk about you through the first minute and a half of the next guy's show. Nobody ever wanted to follow 2-7.
The Marching Roundtable presents DCI Rewatch. A group of friends watch one of their favorite shows, talk about why it's rewatchable, how it's held up over the years, the most rewatchable moment for each section, and how it might be different if produced today. If you'd like to talk about your favorite show, contact Tim at marchingroundtable.com. DCI Rewatch is sponsored by Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Tim. Welcome to the Marching Roundtable, another DCI Rewatch with the wonderful Michael Cesario. Michael, how are you?
Good, Tim. How are you today?
I am so excited that you have agreed to do this. And we're talking about a show that I love, Dr. Mary White. Thank you for hosting Michael at your house again.
It's my pleasure to host Michael every time.
Well, afterwards, we're having this little party and all the neighborhood kids come and we hand out Halloween treats. It's a load of laughs here in Stuart, Florida.
Well, because, you know, Michael, when I think of you, I think of kids, loving kids. That's
punishing children. Yes.
No, listen, I think this is
for
fantastic.
Many years.
So I love this show. 27th Lancers, 1980, iconic show. Michael, why'd you choose this one?
It never fails. Every moment is chock full of effect. And I mean big effect, loaded. Every moment has the touch of the designer on it, and the kids are up to the task.
Yeah, when I watched it again, I mean, I always remember how much I loved this show, but I was like, every second, there's something amazing going on. How did they get it so chock full? I guess it's one of the things we'll talk about. It's so chock full. Mary, do you remember this show? Is this a show that you think of this way?
This is, I think when I was young, I could do the entire Color Guard show.
Which is hard.
But everybody wanted to imitate it, you know? We did Double Flags because 27th Lancers did it.
Absolutely.
And they were groundbreaking and so precise and incredibly controlled and strong. And I love everything about them.
Yeah, Guard is just ridiculous. Just
ridiculous.
It's unbelievable. So they were sort of the premier Guard of the day. Ooh, I shouldn't say that as a regiment person. But, Michael, they were really renowned.
It was. Well, you have really three. You have Lancers, Regiment, and Cavaliers.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And Cavaliers are coming off of big wins at WGI.
True.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Right.
Oh, no, all of those. And they all had a double flag somewhere, and they all had a 50-yard line stunt somewhere. Called the Rockford File, by the way.
I was just going to say, Phantom Regiment call it the Rockford File?
Oh, yeah.
And we all call it the Rockford File.
Everybody calls it the Rockford File. It started with the Kingsmen, really.
Anaheim. Yeah.
And they did it. And I mean, the flags were wrapped and it was pretty. And then that was what happened in those days is you went, oh, you call that a 50-yard line stunt. I'll show you, you know. And so they did the Rockford File and these things are being tossed in backwards and inside out and so on.
Wood and splinters and silk everywhere.
Right. And then George Zingali is not going to sit there and have John Brazzali being the Phantom guy and George Zingali being the 27th Lancer. He's like, that's not how you do it. You know, you should have this and this and this. And so they would go back and forth for several years. The 1981 Lancer 50-yard line stunt is even better because the two lines of flags actually come into the middle and then part again.
Okay.
Where the Rockefeller always had that color guard in there.
Yeah.
Killing each other. Yeah.
It's amazing. And they did everything so closely. That's what kills me about the color guard, Tim. I mean, they're like two steps apart and they're throwing a flag like, oh my gosh, like, isn't someone going to get hurt?
And the answer was sure, but you're never going to know it because they're tough. They're the 27th Lancers. you notice how we just jumped to the color guard, but they're so amazing.
Yeah, you have to.
And then it's written within an inch of its life, Zingali really being a genius. But you have Denise Bonfiglio.
Right.
And, you know, drum corps royalty now, but, you know, at the time.
Peggy Twiggs.
And Peggy Twiggs, my dear Margaret. First of all, the color guard would do anything for those two. Anything. There are people totally devoted to Margaret to this day, to Peggy Twiggs. And
we have a spin named after her.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's not a bad thing.
We do regular spins and Peggy spins, you know.
Right.
Just genius in how to make it right. And of course, George never noticed when they rewrote something so that it would work.
I have to tell you, Tim, one more comment about the color guard. So I was watching this again this morning, and I watched it when you sent it to me like a week ago or the week, 2 weeks. I watched it a few times. And I said, every time I watched it, I learned something from that color guard. And one thing I said was, oh my gosh, this is the typical and classical East Coast color guard style that everyone, and I do. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Their hands, their upper body, the control, the strength, it's fantastic.
Their upper body is like
stiff, but.
That was the role.
Right.
I mean, the role was kind of soldier-esque, if you will. Those feet are marching the whole show.
Right.
And in the meantime, there's a segment where they literally are contorting their, I don't know, shoulders. And I can't believe it didn't disconnect their shoulder. There's probably somebody out there that's going to call in and say it did. I'm a cripple for life.
No, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that part because that's one of my favorite moments for the guard. I think it's at the very end of Open Wide, and they do this thing where they like grab the pole around behind their left shoulder, and then they're like swinging it left and right around. And I don't know how it's conceivably physically possible to do. I've never done
it. I can show it to you right now, Tim. I mean, every color guard person could do it.
Really?
Everybody yes. learned it because
of this.
The Lancers, right?
Yeah.
And you wanted to learn that stunt.
I could still do it for you right now if you wanted, but I won't. I mean, we're not.
And she doesn't have the little Lancer cap on, you know. She doesn't have the Aussie because you have to get all of those stunts away from that darn brim.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. You have to think of the vision of how that was, that they could make that work. And of course, it goes back to the identity of the Corps. The fact that they were this kind of salute to the British Commonwealth. How's that?
Yeah, yeah.
So the red coats, the Busby.
The Busby and the red coat. That rifle line's doing things for the Busby.
I know.
I mean, now, granted, you don't want to see them dance. But
it was wasn't the era. That wasn't.
No.
We weren't there yet.
I'll say.
But what they're doing is so fantastic. The thing I always think is when I watched the show again the other day, I thought, how do they not all like rush in with oxygen tents and medics at the end? Because the guard has worked so hard. I mean, the whole Corps really, but that color guard was going 100 miles an hour full out for the whole 10 minutes. It's exhausting to watch.
At the end of the show. 12 minutes late, 11 and a half minutes later.
Yes.
The rifles get down on their backs and are spinning. The flags are doing blind tosses.
Yes.
Double time with the Busby and on their backs.
And it's
yes.
And then they slide the flag back to the girl that tossed it to them.
Right.
So they can open up the double flag, spin the double flag double fast, and then drop to a half split. Yeah, go ahead.
And this is at the end of like 11 and a half minutes or something. I mean, it's just ridiculous how hard they were working.
Yeah, it's such an intensity. I just absolutely love it.
But it's part of it is because the core had meaning. It had an identity. And so you knew what it meant. Part of it was, now that's the 27th Lancers.
Right.
That's the ID. And we're still talking about a time in which you changed one piece. You changed two pieces. You didn't change the whole show because we came to see what the Blue Devils would do with this or what the 27th. That's my biggest argument about this. I'm not going to say that the Blue Devils shouldn't have won. Okay, yes, I am. Angelica and I argued about this till the week he died. You were supposed to bring something new to the table to be the winner, to be the champion.
Right.
And I thought the Blue Devils were terrific doing their 1979 show in 1980. And I think that they rewarded. They were wonderful. What are you going to say about the Blue Devils? When are they bad? Never. But the really new stuff was the 27th Lancers. And I always used to say, it's just that the stuff was visual, not musical. That was new.
Yeah.
And so I always would say, you're anti-visual, Don. because, you know, the new, anyway.
No, but we have to say, this was part of the controversy. I don't think of 1980's 27th Lancers without thinking, how did they not win? I think people thought they were going to win. I think a lot of people thought they should have won. Like you said, taking nothing away from the Blue Devils. But that 27th Lancer Corps was unbelievable. And so I do think that that's still controversial to this day.
Well, you know, you start with Jim Wedge's arrangements.
Yeah.
And it's music that already has, I feel about Wedge like I feel about Jim Wren. There's some way that they handle, you have to know the piece, you have to know all of that, and the audience wants to know the piece, but then they do some trick to it that gets you up and screaming. And of course, a lot of it's adding endings and hellos and goodbyes that get you going.
Yeah.
Lots of duets and all those horn things that I just loved.
Yeah, that we all think was made up last year. You know, isolate these two, isolate those four, isolate these six. And it wasn't like they had to come up to a mic to play. Sorry.
He said that really loud at my house.
Hey, well, I'm with you. And listen, is there anything more cool and fun than that tuba solo in Open Wide?
Oh, I love that.
It's iconically fantastic.
Tim, it's a contra solo.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did I say tuba? It was definitely contra. But I mean, the contra is like he's playing a jazz solo riff over the chord. Like, it's amazingly great.
Their soloists all were good. The horn line was probably not up to the Blue Devils horn line.
Right.
But the drum line,
yes,
Charlie Poole.
Yeah, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
He talk about the master and have to somehow, because the real change in idioms is Charlie having to play 9 or 2 and Danny Boy with the little Scotch drumming and all that little.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I mean, that was a grand year for drum lines.
I thought there was a lot of unbelievably stylistic things. Am I saying that right? I mean, they were just unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's a variety of music, too. Remember, they open with English Folk Song Suite. Open Wide is this jazz piano on the 20th Century is a Broadway thing. New Country is the drum solo. And then, of course, Danny Boy. So there's all this variety. And the drum writing for all those styles is just masterful throughout.
He completely nails each piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the funny thing is, the guy couldn't be a nicer guy if you met, you know, you run into Charlie even today. And he's like, how you doing, buddy? And you sit there and you go, the guy was a monster. And of course, you got to remember, he was up against a Dennis DeLuca.
Yeah, with Blair Bridgman.
A monster line and Marty Hurley.
Yeah, wow. Regiment. Yeah.
Yeah. So these guys were
Listen, Blue Devils drum line, no slouch either. I mean, those were some very good drum lines back then. And even Spirit, Michael Beck.
All the way down.
Yeah.
you get Mike back in there and he could, they were, what was funny was they were kind of friendly with each other. And later on when they weren't competing, they, you know, they would hang. And it's, it, you know, Tom Float.
Yeah.
These guys are masters.
Yeah.
And you
they're
know.
They're icons.
Yeah, like, well, they've forgotten more than we know, let's put it that way.
So. Yeah, all those guys are amazing and all those drum lines amazing. And you know what the thing is though, Michael, when I think of 27 Lancers, I don't think drumline, because the visual was so strong, so revolutionary, so groundbreaking. The guard was so ridiculous. But I don't want to take anything away from them, because clearly the horn line was amazing, the arrangements were great, and that drumline was just spectacular.
Right, but we can't talk about it, like you say, without talking about the great George Zingali. And he is an absolute, was an absolute genius.
Force? Yeah. A force in this.
Yeah, he's
I mean,
a force in
nature. Unbelievable.
And he was like a fortunate force of nature. There was no stopping him. He got an idea and away he went. Now, it's fair to say, and I think Mark Sylvester, his great assistant and then successor, but I think it's fair to say that we're all sons and daughters of Ralph Pace.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the asymmetrical movement starts out in Ralph's hands. And he did the Lancers, and the first double flag is George's, but with Ralph Pace writing the drill and kind of aiming the show. And Ralph, you know, there is somebody forgotten more than I know, because of his art background and his music background and his antiques background. And
yeah.
He just had an eye for all of this. And when he left, by the way, if you ever want to see a great Ralph Pace show, 78 Crossmen.
Well, that's a great show.
Isn't that a good, yeah. I almost said that, you know.
I love that.
Yeah, with the, you know, so it's that's where you go, how did he get them into a field filling X? And I didn't see him do it. So Ralph sets the tone, but by this time, Zingali is feeling his oats. And there's all these bizarre, first of all, they were the first to do a true reshape where you're going from here to there. It's not a follow the leader. Everybody is going at their own
drill. Yes.
And people think about this as a Garfield thing. And it is, because that's where George and Mark perfected it.
Sure.
But you can see all that coming to life.
Yeah.
But when they make the train by collapsing, oh, my favorite moment visually is,
it makes
me crazy every time I see it. The drum major, is that Jerry Dwyer? I can't remember what his name. He's coming down the 50, the very beginning of the show.
Mm.
And they're counting off.
Love it.
And the color guard starts rolling and the rifles are going, click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. But the amazing thing is, because George instinctively knew effects are in threes. And so instead of, they're in a perfectly good form. They could have expanded from that form. The thing that makes me crazy is they collapse back. They actually are, they hinge. All those Vs are actually hinged backwards and then they take off.
Right.
So the whole thing collapses to even tinier than it is, so that the expansion seems even bigger.
We had to watch it twice today, Tim, because like I totally never got that. But when he showed it to me, I'm like, wow. Yeah, it was great.
No, that opening of the show is so memorable. And, you know, it's sort of like a drum major salute with everybody as part of it. And there was a little bit of a thing back in that time, I think, when a lot of people were doing these sort of elaborate salutes with the guard and everything. But I love that. So I need to watch that again, because it's frustrating to me because it's not all on the DVD.
No, but you know what? But that's there. You can see it.
Oh, yeah, you can see this. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, the point being that it isn't necessarily that you noticed it. I notice it because I write, you know. It isn't some are used to. you still do. But it isn't that, but it's that it set up the expansion. That the tension built, bum, 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 holy cow, they're flying and the flags are flying. They just went, out of this world, and your heart just starts beating with them.
Yeah, it's so fast and so exciting.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
And when they finally hit, you're on your feet and you didn't know how they did that. And the answer was with great care. It's brilliantly constructed in terms of like what we would call, visual analysis today. It would, that moment right there would be like, I see how you did that. That is masterful.
Yeah,
and when they arrive, it's one of his signature shapes, which is the shallow bowl with the lip.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the color. And you see that in the cadets as well.
Absolutely.
Later on, it's
like a further exploration of all these things he was studying and doing.
It was something where he knew how to do it. And you said pick your favorite show. That isn't yours.
Right. Right.
I got plenty of those. But the idea that you could be so in love with this level of program.
I'm really glad you mentioned the opening of the show, because to me, there are so many visual highlights in this show. And I wrote, when I tried to make my most rewatchable visual moment, I literally had to write down like four or five, because this show is just so packed. But that opening, I'm so glad you just described that, because there's something so exciting. There's this frantic down the line rifle flag thing. The drum major salutes, like, off they go. They're going super, super fast. And then da, 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 da. It's just the most satisfying setup of a first impact possibly ever.
Exactly.
It's so brilliant.
Ever.
They knew 27 lines. And the kind of real genius behind this all is George Bonfiglio, the director, who always wanted the crowd, 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 and the audience, and remember the audience. And so he kept wanting the crowd and perfection. And you were like, I don't think we can do both. And they did.
They do.
But you're right. It's the fact that people forget that it's hellos and goodbyes. So here was a hello that was like, because your job in the first 45 seconds, the Mike Cesario rule, in your first 45 seconds, your job is to make them, the audience, shut up and stop talking about whoever was on before you. And the last thing you have to do in the last minute and a half, 2 minutes, is make the audience shut up and talk about you through the first minute and a half of the next guy's show. Nobody ever wanted to follow 2-7.
Well, when we were watching it tonight, before we came on again, we watched it again. And as soon as the first strains of Danny Boy, we both had this intake of breath, like an emotional intake as well,
right,
Tim. I mean, it's just incredible. Hello and goodbye, for sure.
Well, but you're exactly right. The amazing part is, see, this is where having an identity, this is where I think we're missing the boat today.
I knew we were going to get around to this conversation, because such a strong identity for this Corps.
And so, but it also hurt them. It's like the Kilties and the Blue Stars of that, of the previous era. What's new that you can play and still have the British identity? And of course, money. But the real thing here is they strike up. And it's really the drum lick before it.
Yeah.
Again, they know how to set you up.
Yeah, we knew. We knew it was coming.
And you just saw.
Yeah, and the thing is, even today, how many years later, we get emotional?
Well, it means something to us. So you have to decide, I would like to get a bunch of 20...
Yes, such a great idea, Michael.
And see what, don't feed them anything. Just see what of this they like and what of it. These shows move terribly slowly for some of the kids today.
I did think in the horn line, they were just regular marching. I mean, there was no running in the horn line. The color guard only ran once in the closer. So,
nobody was running in the 1980,
man.
But we were talking about kids today.
If you showed it to a 20-year-old.
If you showed it to a 20-year-old, they go, where's the movement? Where's the, there is speed. But
oh, yes.
But there isn't as much speed as
but we have to watch it in context, right?
Yeah, no,
we're fine with watching in context. We were talking about if you showed it to a 20-year-old, they would say that.
Okay, fair enough.
But focusing on the conversation we're having now as the conversation you want to have.
Okay, so talk about hellos and goodbyes, though. That Danny Boy, because you have to mention that as an iconic music moment and visual moment. They create this front. It starts the slow rotation.
The call home. That's the night call home from Buglers.
Mm.
Come home.
Mm.
It has a name. I forgot what it's called, but so it is absolutely part of that British thing. That's what the Buglers played, and so to have that happen, there's that Jim Wedge again.
Mm. Mm.
That's not in Danny Boy.
It is in the version I have in my head.
Right. How did he think to do that? What genius shot from the heavens did he get to think of putting that and putting it there?
Right.
And then you see, and they've done that wheel 45,000 different times.
But it's amazing.
It's, and we all know the rifle work. Everybody in America knows the rifle work for when those girls come. When that thing opens up and those rifles shoot through and then suddenly double time. Yeah, you're like
double time for hours.
Forever. They go on and on and on, and it's the most amazing thing. And the thing is, the whole core opens up for them to come straight down.
Right.
It's the most satisfying visual thing ever. It's so great.
It is. And all they do is then spread out and go on their backs and keep spinning. I don't know. What did they eat for breakfast? Raw meat?
I mean, what? Seriously, and they're wearing this busby
and this heavy red coat.
Yes, it's amazing.
Oh, here's a great uniform.
Oh yeah, we love that part.
Right.
Oh, you'd say it.
Oh, you can say it.
No, I noticed it this morning. I watched it again, and Michael, we talked about it. I know we weren't supposed to talk about it.
It's okay. Tell us now.
A white stripe on the inside of their boot. So that when their legs are like, not that they're in a lunge or anything like that, but when their legs are apart, like in some sort of, that you can see the white stripe continuing with their pant leg. It's very interesting.
Wait. Make sure I understand this. You're saying the stripe, Michael, are you saying the stripe from the pant leg continues on the boot?
Yes.
Yeah.
On the inside of the opposite boot.
Yeah.
You watch.
Right.
Gonna have to go back and look at this. What does this do?
So it continues a whole line because Zingali was a line freak. You know,
right.
The line had to point, and the boot cut it off. But he wasn't going to get rid of those great boots, so they added the white stripe on the inside of the boot.
Got it.
On the inseam of the boot, but the white stripe is on the outseam of the culotte or whatever,
or gaucho or whatever you called them at the time.
Remember gauchos.
Gauchos. I mean, everyone wore gauchos because they did.
Well, a lot of people did a lot of things because they did.
Right. I learned to spin like East Coast style because they did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can do double time for hours. Set me up with a rifle and I still can do double time
you
for
and
hours.
You and Sal Salas.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm no... I can't match you, Mary, but I spent many, many an hour in my backyard spending double time on my rifle when I was in high school, and I'm sure I was inspired by Regiment and 2-7.
And you wonder why you were on the end of the line of baritone.
Mellophone. You played
mellophone.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes, I was on the end of the line in 1980, at the end of the Phantom Regiment show, if anybody wants to find me, which they won't. And all right, so... That rotating front, did they do that multiple times, or it seems so iconic?
They did it multiple times. We're talking about identity and image,
right?
Some of it's repetition,
mm.
And the part of that is that you used to be able to go to a show. By the way, let's not cut out the Spirit of Atlanta in this year either.
Sure.
Oh, that's right.
No.
That's right.
Oh yes. Yeah, certainly could have won.
But I could take a friend to a show in 1980 or 1981 or 1978 and did. I wasn't in drum corps. I wasn't doing drum corps. I was a fan. And I would take, a friend and, here comes Let It Be Me, with the Spirit of Atlanta. And you go, wait till you hear this,
Right.
And then their face gets blasted off.
Like the wall of sound blasting their face off.
Oh, yeah. Such a giant, giant sound from Spirit. And so I love that. So we knew exactly who everybody was. They were being exactly who they were, and they were giving us the things we wanted them to be.
Right. That's absolutely right. Now, the problem is at some time, the folks that are writing this stuff and the kids that are performing this stuff go, we're not doing Danny Boy again, are we? And at some point, you go, I've done what I can do with Danny Boy. I mean, I had an argument with the late, great Dave St. Angel at the Phantom Regiment because he decided to pick the 1992 show. And he picked 1812. And I said, Dave, I've done everything I can do with 1812. I was around for the first couple of iterations of it.
Not the actual 1812. He wasn't. Right.
Well, I was kind of, who do you think picked Napoleon's suits? So I.
You did have a good taste, Michael.
I did. You know that Napoleon invented the buttons on the cuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's so that is. So
I didn't
that
know
is,
that.
That's so his soldiers couldn't wipe their noses on their arms. True.
Okay. Well, there's our nugget of fashion history for
history.
The day.
Costume history, yes, indeed. Anyway, you're
talking about 1812s.
1812. I just said, I don't have anything more. And he said, we're doing it. And I said, okay, we can take it apart. We can fragment it. We can do just pieces of parts that Tchaikovsky picked from. We'll do those pieces and then we'll put them all together to make 1812. Come get your eight. I mean, when all was said and done, it was 1812. And they were tired of hearing the Phantom Regiment do 1812. It wasn't that it wasn't good. It was just the audience got tired of the same old thing. I think of a fabulous corps from my youth, the Kilties.
Sure.
And there was nothing after a while. It was like, what can you do in those kilts?
Right.
It crippled them. Mm-hmm. And I think, let me be fair to today's corps. I think that our legacy corps have the hardest time. It's hard being, the Santa Claras have finally figured out a way out of the problems they were in terms of representation and so on. The Blue Devils have always stayed ahead of the curve most of the time, and certainly recently, but that is in part to the fact that they were always au courant. That was part of their identity, was want something new? Here you go.
Okay, fair, fair.
But the rest of them, it's why the Blue Stars, I don't know who they are. Are they lumberjacks? Are they? Well, it's because they're taking what the Blue Stars are and saying great horns, great drums, and intriguing visual, and saying, what could that identity do this year that's different? So it becomes a masquerade party. But you have problems with some of the Crossmen, the Phantoms, the Madisons, because when they do what they do, everybody goes, oh, they're not going to stick their foot out again and make a wedge, are they? And then you get to Nationals and they stick their foot out and make a wedge and the place goes nuts. Now, that's not old timers remembering the day, because the bulk of that audience
is not old timers.
Not old timers. The bulk of the audience, it's just a cool move. That's why I said, I would like to see what a 20-year-old would like about this.
Yeah.
And then put it in one of today's shows.
Yeah, but the thing, but I do think that when you boil it down, it's unbelievable excellence. It's an unbelievable amount of energy. And there's a lot of
intensity.
Well, I'm thinking innovation, but I'm doing that in context. So maybe that wouldn't be what they respond to. Because when I think of this show, that's what I think of, was how new so many of the drill ideas were.
Well, I think in some cases they would look new today, maybe slow.
Sure.
But who's doing asymmetric, connected, organic growth? Nobody. Nobody. Cadets a little. Bad crown. A little crown. The whole idea.
I can see that. Yes, yes, yeah.
And that's because, oddly enough, there's Jeff Sacktick, a cadet kid who was a cadet.
Who grew up in that.
Yeah, that's what he grew up in.
Mm. Right.
Leon does a little bit of that with Boston.
True.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the coin of the realm.
Right.
And some of those things, I mean, you know, I used to joke that these days the Z-pole is used to get from one place to another. You know, it's not even a moment. But, and so I think there's that. But I think that when you see something, I always said two of my favorite great writers, Brizzoli and Zingali. And Brizzoli wrote as if it was, he was thinking in terms of minerals. And it was a natural force. Brubaker was a mathematician. It was and so we see a lot of his followers today because he was a human computer.
Right, Cavaliers. Brubaker. Yeah, yeah.
Cavaliers Brubaker. I'm sorry.
No, I'm and just so, making sure.
And so those Cavaliers were okay. Now, John was not that mathematician, although he was certainly, but John was energized, like he would see things like shards of glass, and iceberg breaking, those kinds of things. And he would build forms like that. I think of that Nessun Dorma in 1990. Is that the year? 91. The Opry year.
Yeah.
90. Anyway, where, you know, it's this monstrous iceberg. In fact, that's what they called it, was the iceberg. He always saw things as mountaintops and just big. And then Zingali wrote, like a plant growing.
Mm.
If this expanded, that contracted. It was either globs. I mean, we used to joke that, you know, he was going to do the shape of every state in the union. But the things grew, and the better he got. This is all you're looking at here is, I'm not going to say infancy, but you're seeing the start of all these things. You can see the seedlings.
Yeah, I love that, though.
Oh, because you go, and especially if you're a student of the activity,
right?
You go, that's where he got that from. It was his own, you know, he stole from himself. Who doesn't? And so he really was the genius of organic growth in terms of form. He also understood that there are people high up that needed to see something. And while he could perfectly well do a symmetrical picture, he didn't. And it wasn't just coming out of the corner. I think that a couple of those guys, Santa Clara certainly came out of the corner once. And a couple of guys were trying, let's not just start on the starting line. Once that was up and it didn't matter, by 1980, it didn't matter where you started on the field.
That's right.
It was, okay, what do you do with it? But I think that a show that is primarily asymmetric, you know, even Danny Boy, it's a circle, but it's way out there. And, of course, the amount of – can we talk about the amount of field this core covers?
Right, right.
Woo! And there again, the only people that cover a field like that are the Blue Devils.
Right.
Who would be
they were famous for that. Right.
Way the heck out there. I think Blue Devils 79 with those anchors, sliding around the front and then connecting and reconnecting and so on. It's brilliant writing. We would today need to do that in 8 counts.
Yeah.
But it, there's some wonderful stuff. And then you see that, you know, that was Mike Moxley. You see that show up every now and again. So some of those stunts are just good stunts, though. If you had a flag exchange in the course of one of the let's give credit to Danny Wiles and the Cavaliers,
right.
Cavaliers.
Yeah,
they start throwing stuff, and the place goes berserk.
That still works.
That's what I said. It still works.
You take a little vacation from it and come back, and oh my goodness, you know, and especially with drum corps, I keep saying we're not doing fine art, foreign films. This is the summer blockbuster. Get out there and sell tickets.
Right.
You know, talking about flag exchange, one of my favorite things always in this 2-7 show in 1980 was in the middle of Folk Song Suite where they throw the flags over the horn line.
Over there? Yeah.
And I just thought that was just, that just blew my mind as a young marcher back in the day. Like, that was so cool. Now I watch how they constructed it and I see how it all happened. But the, what was that new, Michael? Like, I think it was.
That particular one wasn't new. How he constructed it was completely new.
That's what I mean.
Over people for a while, but.
And Wintergard really was starting to influence all this outside activity too.
Because the Winter Guards were mostly drum corps guards.
Right.
They were their guards. The regiment guard that won a bunch of times and the Cavalier guard that won a bunch of times.
Right.
You know, and State Street was really Madison with girls.
Yeah.
So.
And then later Spirit with girls. But, well.
Yeah, true.
Spirit had girls and.
Yeah, but not in WGI is what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
Madison State Street review that won several times was the Madison boys along with women.
Got it.
And so these were drum corps people who, you know, were affecting. They were popular in the WGI as well. And anyway, but yeah, I think there's great stuff to be seen. But that one, imagine being the horn player and saying, "You're gonna do what?" You're going to send a flag over my head? You're going to send a rifle where? You know? Oh, gosh.
You know, you were talking about those Rockford Files down the 50. I always think about the guardsmen throwing rifles over the Contras. The Contras were down to the 50, and the rifles went flying over. I think that was around that same time frame.
Well, Bill Hardy, let's mention Bill in that mix. Because the core was terrific. Oh, good horn line. There's another one. Good horn line. Great drum line.
Yeah.
But the core never scored high enough for Bill to get his due. He is in the DCI Hall of Fame, though.
That's
so,
good.
I mean, it isn't like we don't pay attention to our own, you know. Wonderful guy. Talk about another great guy, you know. Some terrific writers.
You know, we haven't talked about this drill move in the drum solo that I remember as a high school kid being completely obsessed with. It first happened in 1979, I believe, where the horn line has the flags and they do this sort of opening floating parallelogram thing. Like, that was so mind-blowing to me. So put that in context for me, Michael, because I just thought that was such a brilliant moment, drill moment.
Mark Sylvester told me, oh, many years ago now, but he said, "I finally figured out how we should have done that." But they had to. If you want to talk innovation, you have to remember the 2-7 is one of the pioneers in using multiple size step and variable intervals and distances.
You're right.
And so something would happen and they were – it was getting bigger and bigger because not only were they moving, but the intervals were changing.
Mm.
What we would call today spatial relationships. Just a simpler time. We were dumb. You know, if you were, you know, that wasn't working today, practice harder, you know?
Yeah.
But at any rate, I think that they really saw the benefit of being able to change a form by simply blowing air into it, or it flooded like water. I mean, it was like a water balloon. It would keep expanding as it went. If you put the dots on a water balloon, you could see it do that very thing. And as long as we're talking this era, we have to remember Tony Smith at Boston.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Because he could do, they always had at least three magical moves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he always still helped people out. You could call Tony and he'd come up with a move for you. But here's Zingali. It's just a complete other step. But you're watching it as a seedling. And you see it really turn into the Garfield Cadets, you know. And still kept right on working with the Star of Indiana.
Yeah, I love that you talked about this being a student of the activity, because that's exactly what I was thinking was, if you are a student of the activity, it's so exciting to watch that craft evolve from what they were doing with 2-7, how that evolved clearly into all the things that happened with Garfield and then on to Star. Like, you could see him explore things. I always loved telling the story when I met George Zingali in 1983, and he showed me his charts. It was amazing. There were these giant drawings,
huge
pads where he drew the things, and then Mark, whoever, went out to go in and figure out how to chart it. But he talked about how he finally figured out, or it was around 83, that you didn't have to close the form, that the eye would close the form for you. Because you can see in 2-7 how hard he's working to make the forms close and stay connected. And I remember him telling me, you know, I realized you don't have to do that, that the eye will close the form for you. That was revolutionary for me to hear him explain that to me as a young drill kid, you know.
And that was one of his things, was because cadets were famous for closing the form. And the answer was it was never really closed. But on occasion, I'm going to say 83 or something like that, we didn't close it. It was a mistake. It was a mistake.
Really?
He was concerned that the guard stops to do this toss that they should have done on the move. But not terrible. I mean, nobody noticed, I don't think, except those of us going, oh, we should have done that. You know, you're, there's always a detail. The 27th Lancers, the other thing about them was those kids were gutsy. They would do anything. They fearless performers, fearless. Throwing a rifle over my head, sure. What am I playing, a high E? Okay.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I get that feeling from the whole core.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It's unbelievable. And that was kind of like a reputation.
Well, they had a tough reputation. Remember that those East Coast cores were tough.
Mm. Yeah, like we remember, you know, a story about Boston Crusaders sleeping in their opening position at, you know, Bernie Crum Stadium, like all these. I'm sure it's a rumor, you know. But
you are sure it's a rumor? No, I don't think it is.
Okay.
I think they did. I every time I hear one of these stories, sometimes they're about a corps I was with and know that was true. You know, some of them you don't say anymore because, you know, it's this or that. But I think that it was a tougher time,
mm-hmm.
and that was how you showed your worth. We show our worth different ways today, I think. Virtuosity isn't. Remember, the 27th Lancers didn't have a lot of secondary education music majors.
Yeah, that's right. Very true.
Drum corps was different at the time.
From the local area.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They
were local. Yeah,
relatively local.
Yeah,
and within so many mile radius, of course, you know, you know, if you were in Revere, you know, you could throw a stone and hit six other cores, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of the little ones did fall by the side in order to pull together to make some of these great cores. The Lancers come out of this fabulous core where I was in the stadium when George Bonfiglio's corps sat down on the starting line in Roosevelt Field in 1966.
Mm.
I See Reveries, Immaculate Conception Reveries. They got, I mean, VFW, please. You want to talk about judging? We'll have that another time, but don't talk to me about VFW judging. But anyway,
yeah, that's a whole other conversation.
It is, but they were allowed to go on. But from that point, everybody's mad at them and blah, 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 blah. And George he had no sympathy for crybabies and weaklings. And I don't mean the kids loved him, don't get me wrong. But it was all about, well, then we're going to toughen up and we'll form a different corps. And there they were, the 27th Lancers. And wow. I don't, it's not my group, so I don't know how they came with the red, and I don't know the khaki and all of that, but, And that folk song, Sweet Thing, remember the Blue Stars did something almost identical. I mean, it was all those British folk songs, and you could add a da-da here and a da-do there and a rup chicka ticka ticka dup, and suddenly, because it was British folk songs, you weren't going to pay Ralph Vaughan Williams.
Ray Vaughan Williams.
Yeah, he wasn't going to get any money out of your show. And so there were quite a few that did this kind of English. It's that kind of thing is so perfect. And
well, it's in a good key. It's light. It's all those.
It
things.
gets all your juices flowing.
Yep.
As they do to this day. By that I mean the British just know how to do pageantry.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a way that, and 27 also has a special place in my head. The 1980. You said you pick, and the 1980 27 then goes on and does the Olympics.
Right.
In Lake
That's
Placid.
Right, in Lake Placid.
The Winter Olympics in 1980, they performed and represented us very well. I remember watching it on TV.
It was on TV. And what was amazing was all these people and all these Olympians and everybody's in the stand. And the actual Olympians are applauding for the 27th Lancers. And when the color guard does a 50-yard line stunt, the place goes berserk.
Yeah.
And you just go... And that's where I kept going, if the world saw more of us, they'd get it.
Mm.
Because here's the world, and they were biting, And it was written specially for, I don't know how they had the time to rehearse that, fit it into that ice rink.
They didn't wear uniforms, so they wore like jackets, right? Down jackets hats?
They had, well, first of all, hats. It was freezing cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did not wear their own uniforms. I believe that they were done, under the aegis of the Olympic Committee.
Correct. Like,
so I'm thinking like white furry outfits.
Me too. Like white down jackets.
Yeah, something like
that. They weren't furry, but they were puffy.
Yeah, puffy.
Okay, puffy.
White puffer.
And they had little knit caps.
Yeah.
But they were fantastic, and they represented the activity so well.
And now Ralph Lauren, designs the Olympic outfits now.
And they look exactly the same.
And they look the same, white puppy.
Well, it is winter. All right, so I'm going to say, if you had to choose your favorite visual moment, can you pick one, Michael?
We're going to pick the same one, but I'm going to let him go first.
No, you go.
Okay, my favorite visual moment is that little rifle sandwich between the drum line.
Mm.
When the rifle line is between those two lines of drums, I love that. I think that's amazing.
Where they're rotating onto the 50.
Yeah.
And when they do, then the rifles shoot out the back.
I just love it.
It's just those it's detailed within an inch of its life.
And they're so close. they're just spinning the crap.
Yeah. How did they do that?
It's quite miraculous. Michael, can you pick a? Do you have a? You want to pick a moment?
A moment.
I know it's so hard to do in this show.
This is a visual person's dream show.
Yeah.
Everything about it. I gave you one of my secret moments, which is the cocking of the gun, if you will, before they shoot. They pull the trigger back. It's just, how did they think of that? I have no idea. Mm. But I have to go with the moment that gives me goosebumps. Is when they've rotated the front. By the way, it's almost a no danger front. You realize you don't ever see it from the end. So,
well, they're smart that way.
Yeah, they were very smart. But it's still a full court rotation.
It is.
But when that whole thing opens up and the rifles come through and Wedge, it's orchestrated within an inch of its life. And you've had the call home. So it's really that total moment that just, and you just, you're done. You're over. And of course, that's not how the song should go. It's not a march. Nothing about that is right, and it's perfect.
I agree. That.
That's great.
That's really great. And I have to tell you that I have to put that. I wrote down so many visual moments, but I have to agree with you that there's just something so emotional and special about the construction of that whole thing. The thing rotates and then down those rifles double timing their butt off coming through. It's just so great. I mean, I remember I was watching it the day and I just sat there saying out loud, this is so great. It's just fantastically constructed and performed. You know, it makes me love drum corps again more than ever when you watch a show like this.
And I think that kids today are interested in where they can. I've had a chance to do a couple of drum corps history nights. Mm-hmm. And they're full of questions. When did that start? Why do we do this? How did we come to this? Why are we this and that? You'd be amazed at what the kids in the army, and some of them are serious questions. Why have we stopped doing this? Or what made us do that? Or why are the rules the way they are? And you've got to remember all these people, George Zingali, they had to change the rules to accommodate that show. Hmm. I mean, the next year, everybody was like, you know. And they had to remake rules in order to make sure that everybody was included.
So in other words, you mean as the innovation of the way the shows were designed happened, we had to change the rules to accommodate it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Evolution of show, evolution of rules.
And that's why.
Evolution of the activity.
And the activity keeps moving forward. The reason it moves forward and is not static, whether we like it or not. But the reason it moves forward and it's not static is it's the corps writing the rules. It's the corps. I mean, it's a representative situation, but it still is what do they want to see on the field? What do they want to take away? What they don't want to credit? What do they want to credit? And that is all. It's not a mystery group that you don't know. I mean, the same holds true with WGI. But with DCI, the directors have the say on what it's going to be. I mean, in terms of safety and health, they're all on the same boat.
Sure.
You know, and we have safety and health people coming out our ears because we have a strong realization of our obligation to the students that put themselves in our hands. That said, the corps pick what it's going to be, what we've agreed to, what we've not agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a group that doesn't have that, that's a for-profit, something like that. You don't know who the board is. You don't elect them. You don't pick the rules. And so you're kind of, well, I guess we can go compete there, but I'm not sure I understand. So the fact that it's all open and clear and you know exactly who's calling the shots. You may not agree, but come to the next Rules Congress and change it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think we've watched them grow because every one of the people that we talked about tonight then took the new rules and then pushed them further.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, so one of the other things that we have on the agenda, and you can tell me, Michael, if you don't want to go here, but the other thing we've been sort of wondering is, if somebody was going to produce this show today, clearly it wouldn't be done in the same way. But how would it be different, or better yet, which corps might try to do it?
We continue our discussion, including considering how this show might be different if produced today, after this short sponsor message.
This podcast is sponsored by FJM, Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com. FJM is one of the leaders in uniforms for marching groups, drum lines, color guards, and concert dress and choirs. This includes the FJM Cesario collection. At the recent BOA finals, 9 out of the top 12 bands were performing in FJM uniforms, including the top 5 bands. FJM also provides all kinds of accessories for marching groups, as well as flags and guard equipment. Find out more at fjminc.com. That's fjminc.com. Fred J. Miller Incorporated, the company that changed everything.
One of the other things that we have on the agenda, and you can tell me, Michael, if you don't want to go here, but the other thing we've been sort of wondering is, if somebody was going to produce this show today, clearly it wouldn't be done in the same way, but how would it be different, or better yet, which core might try to do it? Or which core would you want to see do it? And I mean, it might be that they just take a couple of these songs and expand them into a modern show. I'm assuming that's what would happen. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have five different varied tunes in this era.
Why not?
Because it's not done, but I'm all for hearing about how it could be.
Well, that's the thing. I think if you take this show and you bring it into modern times, you've got to accept the premise that it does, it's a wide, huge range of variety. Now, how are they connected is what we would ask today.
Okay. Okay, you fair, see? Fair.
And so that would be what it is. But you mean to tell me that if the Carolina Crown, with the name Crown, and that horn line wanted to play English music?
That's what I was thinking of, actually. The same core.
Yeah. Hmm. You mean, and they've got a history of playing a lot of notes. And when they come to hit you, you get hit. And I think that, I mean, I'm not asking them to do this show. I'm just saying I could see them doing it and ripping your face off. Hmm. And I think because Sactic would understand how to build on Zingali, you mm-hmm. see, I think they could do a great job of it. And, you know, I don't think that Mike Klesch and Tom Hannum would be, I don't think they'd sign up for it, but I think their arms could be twisted to do it. I think.
Well, it's sort of our fantasy. Like, who can we imagine taking it and turning it into something great? And this is a good answer.
And it was my answer, too.
And it was,
we had not talked about that.
Yeah.
That's a perfectly good answer. I wrote down Bluecoats. Just because I feel like they have this thing going where they can take an idea and turn it into something so cool and fun and energetic. And it has sort of that same vibe and energy. It could. So I could imagine that.
That's interesting.
It would not be, it wouldn't be traditional 2-7, but I could see them taking some of the elements of this. And I would love to see what that team would do with it.
Well, they're crazy, and so they can do anything. But, I mean, they're crazy in a wonderful way.
Of course.
I mean, you know.
Of course.
Johnny Vandercuff could write anything. I do think that they'd have to get a whole new set of horns. Players. They have such a fabulous vocabulary in the pop, jazz, and they've taken some great, you know, steps and all that. That to play... I mean, they do a hell of a job of 9 or 2.
Well, or open wide. I'd love to see.
Wide.
I'd love to
do
hear.
Do I call it? Is it open wide? Man, I've been calling it 9 or 2.
It's open wide because 9 or 2 was the next year.
Oh. Okay. I was thinking it was 9 or 2 also.
I think I called it 9 or 2. But
it's okay. I knew what you meant. Yeah, 9 or 2 was 81. I'm pretty sure, and that's when the guard did tosses with their feet. Remember that, Mary?
Yeah.
They caught them in their feet.
Yeah, that's
they caught them with their feet.
That's what I mean. Try anything. Catch it. Catch the silk in your teeth. Okay.
It's fantastic. It's so much fun.
Well, I would say the Bluecoats would not have been my choice on that because I think there's a certain, although Doug Thrower's Canadian, so maybe. Maybe they could.
No, I see your point. But it's fun to imagine.
It is fun.
All right. So
you love to see? I've got it.
Okay.
Next year.
Got it.
Everybody does their version of this show.
I would love
that
to see.
That would be so fun.
I would
fun.
Love to see that.
Everybody has to take the 27 Lancers and make it happen in their own unique way. I always said that what we should do is pick an artist, like say the Beatles, just because we just saw a terrific Beatles show.
Terrific.
And say, this is the year we're saluting, DCI salutes the Beatles. And
wow.
Can you imagine how different those shows would be?
How fun is that idea?
I love it.
I love it.
If if only somebody was like the artistic director of DCI. I couldn't move that idea off the table for love nor money.
No, but it's fun to imagine that, because how that's one of the things that I do love is we have all these different creative teams doing things in all these variety of ways. I would love to see them all do their take on such a thing. That's a very fun thing to think about.
Well, it's not an unusual thing. When you do a salute to Stephen Sondheim, you get this group or that singer or this person or, you know, yes, Bernadette Peters is going to show up, but so are these people to sing the choral. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's lots of salutes to who was, you know, let's salute a true genius, you know, Elton John or Billy Joel or Stevie Wonder.
Mm.
There's enough songs there to go, you know.
Forever.
Forever.
Yeah. I love this idea.
And that way, you know, maybe you could get that celeb to come out for the day. You know.
Have you ever pitched that to a choir?
No, I pitched it to DCI.
How'd that go, Michael?
I don't know.
Nobody wants you to have to tell them what they're going to do, I know.
Well, I think it's that the directors are often very scared of their staffs. They're scared they're going to leave. And there's good reason for that. I mean, you know, these guys and gals are pretty smart cookies, and they are so creative. What, mm-hmm. you're going to tell, you know, really?
Michael Shapiro?
Yeah. You can tell Michael Shapiro what he's doing? Adam Sage?
Right.
Really?
You're gonna geniuses, yeah. Right.
So these folks have, I think it would level the playing field, because the most interesting version of something might be, but you know, you could snore yourself to death if everybody decided to do the eclectic Beatles. I once programmed a show called Undiscovered Bernstein, and we know how that turned out. You know, there was a reason they were undiscovered, and we'll just leave it that way.
Well, I couldn't have had more fun. I feel like we probably need to start wrapping this up, because I've just had such a great time. Michael, what I love about these is we're having fun remembering, but we're also, it's an educational conversation. We're talking about why it was great, how it was put together, why it worked. I think these conversations are super fun. Mary, what do you want to say about this whole 27th Lancers thing that we've been talking about?
Well, something I discovered, Tim, about myself, about the drum corps activity, the evolution, is that we've come a long way, but to see the evolution happening, I think you can see it in the 1980 27th Lancers. Like, you can see that beginning, and that I had not thought of until recently, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it is cool. You can see, like Michael said, you can see the germination of all the things that are to come in these pieces of this puzzle that are being so artfully explored. Wow, I need to write that down. That was fantastic.
I know, sentence. I was just going to say, you need to write that down, Tim. All right.
Michael, what do you want to say in closing about this whole love of this show and talking about it?
Well, I just hope whoever talks about some of the shows that I love, that I was involved in some small way, notes the brilliant genius of the people that I got to work with.
Mm.
But I do think that the charm of this is, maybe somebody will say, they just devoted how long to an 11-minute show? Maybe I should check this out.
Mm. I hope so. I hope that we've inspired some people to go check it out and see it. And I'm so happy that I have my collection of old DVDs from the drum corps years that I can go back and watch these shows.
I think you can still get these. I'm not shilling for DCI.
Mm, but I don't know if you can. Maybe.
Legacy DVDs?
I don't know.
They might be available.
Well, I'm glad that I'm able to look at them. And I'm just going to say, I just think the corps should have won. Blue Devils were wonderful. But I it's always been made me sad. I feel like I would love for 27 to have had that championship, you know, as part of their legacy. But the legacy that they do have of this excellence, this innovation, double spinning on your back in a Busby, all these amazing things, It's
fantastic. They should have trained the Busbies to spin.
I'm sure
they could have done it. Peggy Twist could do anything.
They could. If anybody could do it, it was that team. Michael, Mary, you guys are wonderful. Thank you so much for having this conversation.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
If you'd like to talk about one of your favorite shows on DCI Rewatch, contact Tim at marchingroundtable.com. Just choose a show and a couple of friends to join you. It can be any show, any core, any year. Just choose a show you weren't involved with in any way. And let us know what you think about this discussion. Do you agree with the opinions of our panel? Join the discussion on the Marching Roundtable Facebook group page. And don't miss WGI Rewatch Podcasts, presented by the Marching Roundtable.
If you're a fan of the Marching Roundtable, please tell a friend or colleague about us. Consider writing a review on iTunes. Or better yet, become a member. For as little as $2 a month, you can get access to every podcast release and help us keep creating and sharing this great information. Go to marchingroundtable.com and click on Podcast Membership. Thanks again to the sponsor of this podcast, Fred J. Miller Incorporated, found at fjminc.com. This is your host, Tim Hinton, the Beast of the Marching Arts. Hear my marching band show arrangements at timhinton.com.
If you're a business that works with band directors, marching bands, color guards, or drum lines, you should sponsor podcasts at the Marching Roundtable. Our listeners are the exact audience you're trying to reach. And with thousands of podcast downloads each month, it's a great way to directly reach your target audience. For more information, click on the sponsorship opportunities link at marchingroundtable.com or email Tim at tim@marchingroundtable.com. You can grow your business and help support what we're doing here on the podcast.